is my way to begin with prayer. Now, you've already said a lot of prayers, but I hope you don't mind another one. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for the incredible blessing of being here today in Chesapeake, Virginia. Thank you for this beautiful land. Thank you for the waters. Thank you for the lush green. Ah, beloved Creator, thank you. Thank you for the light of the sun that gives us light, warmth, and energy. Thank you. Thank you for the breathing aware air, the prana, the pneuma, the ruach, the spiritus. It has many names, but the air that we breathe in that connects us all. Thank you. Thank you for the waters everywhere, the waters in outer space, the waters in the clouds, the waters under the earth, the waters in the river streams, lakes, and oceans, the water in our heart, the water in our heart that connects to the heartbeat of the land, connects to the heartbeat of other people we love, connects to the heartbeat of what nature wants to happen. And thank you, Pachamama, Mother Earth, that we're born from, that we return to. Thank you, Mother Earth. Thank you for the earthworm named after her mother that has no eyes but it can see, has no ears but it can hear. Thank you for the vibrations that the earthworm feels. Thank you. We love you, earthworm. We love everything in the earth, the nematode worms, the bacteria, even the viruses, germs germinate. That's how life is created. Germs germinate. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. We ask that the viruses and bacteria be in balance so that it supports us, so that it lives within us in a beautiful way, in a harmonious, balanced way, and doesn't go out of balance, doesn't harm us, doesn't harm anything. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all the critters on Mother Earth. Thank you for the bear, the fox, the bobcat, the deer, the elk, every critter. And thank you for the birds that sing to us in the morning. They're really speaking, but we think of it as singing. Thank you to your sacred conversations. Thank you so much. Thank you for this group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about From Politics to Love, a journey from fragmentation to wholeness. There is so much difficulty in the world today. There's a little bit of polarization. It's not like in here or everywhere. So we ask, Creator, that we be provided the wisdom, that we be a vessel for the wisdom that teaches us how to be loving and kind and patient and to listen deeply to everyone. Thank you so much. Aho Mitaku Yasin. Thank you. May it be so. Okay. So I want to begin with what is love? What is love? That's not the easiest question. We talk about it a lot. We say the word a lot, especially here in America. We say the word a lot, but in Native America, in Navajo, where I have a lot of friends in New Mexico, which is where I'm from, there really isn't a word for love. Now, there is a translation for I love you, but people say Anoshonene. It might be translated as I love you, but really that word is about respect. That word is about respect. About deep respect and honoring, a lot like what you were doing, everybody here, with namaste. We honor the divine in you, honors the divine in me. That's really where the word kind of originates from in Navajo. in the West, there have been some beautiful stories about love, some very ancient old stories. Empedocles, you may have heard about this story. He talked about the four roots. Later on, people interpreted that as the four directions and the four elements: light, air, water, earth. And really, for the ancient Greeks, it was about the rarefied air, the rarefied air. But for Empedocles, he was actually talking about gods and goddesses: Zeus, Hera, Nestes, Adonis. That's all he talked about, but it was interpreted later to be the four roots. But Empedocles said that those four roots were mediated by love and strife. And he actually said that originally, when the cosmos was being created, there was only these four roots and love. There was no strife. But ever since strife came in the picture, love begets strife and strife begets love. You know, this is what has been going on ever since. But it's a beautiful, beautiful story. And it's beautiful because it's love that unites the elements, that brings them all together. Strife is what separates the elements. And when they're separated, we don't feel as good. We don't feel as good. Love can cure everything. It can. It can. But we have to be careful. We can't throw around love too easily. You know, I learned from some of my indigenous friends that they're not always happy by the word love used toward them, because somebody using that love may not have known their story. So what I would say is the very first thing that we have to do is listen to another's story. Again, like the namaste, you have to honor the other person exactly where they are, the other culture exactly where they are. And then amazing things can happen when you make that connection, when you make that connection. So Christopher's read the book, Original Politics. That book, the foundational premise of it is how strong an impact Native America made on the founding of this nation. Most people think that the United States was created out of Enlightenment values from that century, and it was, but it also was created out of Native American values: liberty, equality, natural rights. Those things, I would contend, they were learned by the colonists who had been living here for 150 years before they formed a political nation. And I'm not talking about the early explorers. The early explorers were coming for centuries, but they turned around and came back. But in 1620, as everybody knows, the Mayflower Pilgrims came, and they brought women and children, so they were clearly intent on staying. And the Mayflower Pilgrims formed a very good partnership with the Wampanoag, which was a loose confederacy of various tribes in Plymouth area in Massachusetts. And for 55 years, they enjoyed a deep friendship and a military alliance. Now, in all honesty, not everybody got off scot-free. I mean, in the Wampanoag and the Mayflower Pilgrims, they joined together and they almost vanquished the Pequots. Do people know about the Pequots? Have you ever been just outside of New York City near Scarsdale? They have the world's largest casino now. Now, Donald Trump wasn't very happy about that when that casino started. And he said a lot of things like, oh, these Pequots, they don't look like Indians. Well, that was almost partially true, because they were nearly vanquished in 1636. And so to preserve their culture, they do look like a lot of Americans. There's a mixture of complexions. So in a strange way, it was a kind of form of poetic justice, but that's another story. It's not all a rosy story about the Pequots. But I would say that the Native Americans really contributed an enormous amount to this culture, an enormous amount. It was Ben Franklin. I just came back from Philadelphia, by the way. I just came through Philadelphia. It's actually the first time I've ever been to Philadelphia. I was encouraged partly by Christopher. I grew up in New York. It's embarrassing to say that I never was in Philadelphia. It's terrible, right? Terrible, but I did. I went there. I saw the Liberty Bell. It is everything it's cracked up to be. You know, so I saw the Liberty Bell. I saw Independence Hall. It's all good. It's all good. I loved it. The place is dripping in history. It's great. And I love Ben Franklin. I love Ben Franklin not only because he was really a creative thinker. I have this theory, though. I'm not sure if he was as creative till he got just the right amount of lightning. I don't know. It might have taken him just to the perfect place where he got inspired. But Ben Franklin, you know, he had an interesting history. Everybody knows that he printed treaties. He was a printer, but he printed a lot of the treaties between Native America and the British government. And because of that, he got to know about Native American beliefs. Later on, he becomes a Pennsylvania assemblyman. And he actually lost his job. He got voted out of office because he kept taking the side of the Native Americans so often in his writing that the people actually objected. But that was a great gift of divine providence, because when he lost that job as Pennsylvania assemblyman, the next job he got was to be the Indian ambassador to the Haudenosaunee, or the Iroquois. That's what the name the French gave them. They call themselves Haudenosaunee, the people of the Longhouse. The people of the Longhouse started their own confederacy a very long time ago. Some estimates are 1132 AD. And they started their confederacy because they were fighting amongst themselves. And in their story, a peacemaker came from outside of the tribe, not one of the tribe. This peacemaker, by the way, stuttered. He stuttered. I know this man, Bruce Johansson, who wrote a beautiful book about this, and he stutters. And when he came to visit the Haudenosaunee, they welcomed him with such open arms because, hey, he was like the peacemaker. But the peacemaker, partly because he stuttered, he wanted some delegates to spread that word of love. So he first found a woman named Jacotsana, and then later he found a man named Hiawatha, and he convinced all the tribes to unite, except one. There was a chief named Tadadado of the Onondaga, and his name, he actually had like Medusa. He had snakes in his hair, you know. He was like considered almost evil. He was really tough. He didn't want to unite. He didn't want to have peace until the peacemaker realized that he needed to give this man a special responsibility. He gave him an added responsibility. He told him the Onondaga are going to be the executive branch. They're going to be in charge of things in some ways. He gave him a special responsibility, and also he was helped by Hiawatha. The name Hiawatha means the one who combs. And Hiawatha combs the snakes out of Tadadado's hair. And so the Iroquois unite, and they united by getting in front of a big tree. They partially uprooted the tree, and they buried all their weapons underneath the tree, and then they replanted the tree. That's where we get the phrase, bury the hatchet. You know, that's where it is. So they buried that there, and then the peacemaker took, let me use this for an example. He took one arrow, and he handed it to one of the tribal members, and then he took it back and he broke it over his knee. And then He reached behind him and got a sheaf of 5 arrows. And he did the same thing. The sheaf was with the arrows connected together. He tried to break it over his knee. It did not break. And the message was that there's strength in numbers and strength in staying together. Later on, when Ben Franklin has this friendship with Chief Conestoga, the Onondaga chief, Chief Conestoga tells the colonies to unite, and this is on July 4th, 1744, exactly 32 years before the Declaration of Independence was signed. Chief Conestoga tells the colonists, you must unite like the Iroquois have done. You must become the 5 fingers of one hand. You must never fall out with one another. You must support all each and one of you together. Now, he took an arrow and gave it to Ben Franklin, took it back from Ben Franklin, and then reached behind him and took a sheaf of 13 arrows and tried to break it over his knee. It did not break. Ben Franklin never forgot that. The meaning was clear to all, and that's why Ben Franklin recommended that in the Great Seal of the United States, in the eagle's talon, there's the 13 arrows. It's balanced by the olive branch and the other talon. The eagle itself was from the Iroquois, also taken from the Iroquois. The great tree of peace, which they had buried their weapons underneath and had 4 sacred roots going in the 4 directions, that tree was on top of it was an eagle. That symbol came from the Iroquois. So a lot of symbols, and the ideas of life, liberty, and natural rights came from the Iroquois. Now, and so we got off to an incredible start in this country, an incredibly good start. And for 50 years, everybody across the world understood that the United States of America was a partnership between European values of the Enlightenment and native values of life, liberty, and natural rights. And that's what everybody understood. Now, things changed. They changed when Andrew Jackson came along. How many know about Andrew Jackson? I'm really looking forward to when Harriet Tubman's on the $20 bill myself, because Andrew Jackson is not my favorite president. Andrew Jackson was the biggest force for ethnic cleansing that this country has ever seen. You know, he came into office 1828. He's the one who signs the Indian Removal Act. He's the one who first fought a war against the Creek. And then he went into Florida when Florida was not even Florida yet. So, and he fought a completely illegal war against the Spanish. But because Florida then got ceded to the United States, it was forgiven. Andrew Jackson was never prosecuted for any of that. And then he rounded up the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, and lastly the Cherokee, and he took them all out to Oklahoma, what's known as the Native Territories back then. And the interesting thing is he also rounded up free slaves and some unfreed slaves and took them along with them. And that's why the complexion of this country changed right then, and particularly among the Cherokee. If you've noticed, the Cherokee can be of any complexion, from the whitest white to completely African American, because they all mix together. So an act of what I would say was not exactly, was kind of hate, can become love. This is partly what one of the messages I want to bring. From politics and the politics of division, there can come love. We can move from the politics of division to love, and we have been doing that in this nation's history for the most part. Like Theodore Parker said, and Martin Luther King and Barack Obama like to reiterate, The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. It bends toward justice. So in the biggest picture, we have been moving toward a more increasingly inclusive way. In the biggest picture. But that doesn't mean there isn't a lot of backlash. You know, and there has been backlash. But I will say to you that love is coming through. Love is going to win. Love always prevails. It always prevails. So, thank you for this group, because you're pretty amazing. You're pretty amazing. And I would suggest this too, which I'm not sure whether you've brought this up in services here before, but I would suggest looking at love not in the human world, because this is the way I tend to look at it. I learned from the Hopi how much the waters, for instance, and I think of love as a lot to do with water, you know. We're so much water. Our heart is water. Our heart sends out its blood, its love, to our capillaries, through our arteries, our capillaries, our veins. That's just like Mother Earth. Mother Earth is like that. When I was in Costa Rica, I had an awakening once. I realized I had this vision that I was a dolphin, and I dove down to the bottom of the ocean. Until right before I got to the bottom of the ocean, I realized I'm a river dolphin. I'm a river dolphin. I need to come back up and go toward the river. And I did. I went back toward the river, and consciousness in this vision, the consciousness went way, way up into the upper atmosphere and started looking way down on this little dolphin there who's swimming out toward the river. And then I see like five other rivers. I was in Costa Rica then, and this is the way the rivers have so much energy, so much prana. And I saw all these rivers coming together at the ocean, and I felt Mother Earth's heart start to beat. And it was static. And I went back and I talked to Grandfather Leon Secatero, and he told me, "That's good, Glenn. That's good, because that's why there's cardiovascular disease on this planet. We dammed up too much of the rivers." That is, the rivers are Mother Earth's arteries, veins, capillaries. Can't dam them up. You've got to let them be free. And that's the way I tend to look at it. I also look at water like that. I look at the underground water. The underground water, when it is getting low, it sends love up to the clouds, and then that's what makes it rain. They're in communication. They're in communication all the time. The waters can never be separated. And you are the same. You guys, you can never be separated. Human beings can never be separated. We are all like that. We're 70% water. And that's a beautiful thing. So I want to thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Much love to you. Thank you. Okay, thank you. All right. Making America sacred again. I don't know if that's 20 minutes or not.
So let's get centered in our seats. On the ground for a moment, and let's take that love from Glenn's talk. Let's focus it in our heart. Imagine a brilliant, bright, white light, or golden light, whatever colored light you choose, centered right in your heart. Feel that love. Let us feel that wholeness. Let us feel the connection with one another. After all, there's just one of us in this room. Let us feel that connection, and let us breathe in through that golden or white light in our hearts right now. Maybe take you do, feel the gratitude. Feel the gratefulness for Glenn, for the music group, for all of your brothers and sisters who are here in this place today, those watching on live stream, all the Unity churches, all the churches, our entire nation, the entire world. Let us breathe that love of connection, that wholeness through our hearts now.
To be an expression of